In the meantime, let's say good afternoon to our expert guest. Merle Manfield is the program director of the Zero Dropout Rate campaign being run by the DG Murray Trust. And late last week, they released a report looking into the scale of the problem, also looking at international research for possible solutions. Merle, it's great to have you with us on the show today. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Pippa, and good afternoon to your guests.
These stats I've just shared basically say that our effective matric pass rate is not 81.3%. It's rather down in the region of 39 or 40%. Is that correct?
That's absolutely correct. And actually, if we look at the number of learners who were in grade 2 10 years ago and who of them made it to matric or how many of them passed matric last year, 2019, we find that the rate is actually, or the throughput pass rate is actually 41%. And so that's a stark contrast to what DBE is telling us in terms of an 81.3% pass rate for matric.
Yeah. Now, obviously, I think we need to say up front, well, we know matric is not the only path to employment, and there is a whole other aligned conversation to be had about whether we need to be directing some learners into different streams of education and trades, etc. But just for the sake of comparison, do we have any stats that talk to the difference of having a matric certificate when it comes to employability? Do we know, for example, what percentage of our current unemployed do and don't have matric certificates?
Absolutely. So, you know, the unemployment rate is a lot higher for learners who don't have a matric. I think it stands about 44% of learners who are looking for work between the ages of 15 and 35 without a matric certificate would most likely go into a low-paying or unskilled job and or be unemployed. And 39% with a matric certificate looking for employment would have a better opportunity or more likely to enter into some form of employment and have a higher earning potential. In fact, about 39% more than those who don't have.
Yeah.
We also know that our TVET space and our transition support for learners leaving the school space and going into kind of a different FET setting is very, very poor. The support for that transition is poor. So research shows that only about 1% of TVET students have less than a matric. So even those structures are, you know, more inclined to accept a learner who has a matric certificate than one who doesn't.
Interesting.
And so that really creates serious barriers for learners who leave school early or drop out of school early because the access that they will have is extremely limited.
Okay, and just to say, we are hoping to facilitate a conversation about the TVET options in a week or two, so I don't want to spend too much time on that today, but it is important to note because what we're saying here, effectively, Merle, is that if we continue to see dropout rates at the rate at which we currently have them, we will continue to see the ranks of the unemployed and potentially unemployable being swelled year after year, if not unemployable, but people who are likely to have limited ability to change their trajectory in life and to improve upon their independent economic future.
Absolutely. And this problem is extremely difficult because of our past and our history. We know that the learners who are mostly affected by it are learners who are in poorer communities, in poorer schools, because the barriers are just a lot more difficult to breach or to overcome.
Yeah.
And access to services is more difficult. So that means that we're actually facilitating the cycle of poverty, you know, because the best way for a learner to be able to create or to gain access and improve that trajectory is to have education. And if we're closing that gate, we're making it a lot more difficult for learners who already are on the back foot to have that access and to improve their circumstances. And then, you know, just basically facilitating that cycle of poverty where a learner leaves school, has no way to facilitate their lives or navigate their lives effectively, become economically active citizens in our country, and essentially, you know, just increasing that gap. And that inequality gap in our society. We know, for example, that 3.4 million young people in our country are not involved in any education, employment, or training opportunities currently. Those are between the age of 15 and 24. And so these young people, unemployed, uneducated, and unable to access opportunities, are, you know, perpetuating the cycle of poverty that we are trying and we need to eradicate within our country.
Now, before we talk about the specific factors playing into this, Merle, an interesting question on the SMS line from our listener, Graham. He wonders, do you know how the dropout rate has changed over the last 20 years? Is the situation getting worse or better? Do we even have comparable statistics to be able to compare it?
So all of the statisticians will tell you that in South Africa, we have no real way of calculating dropouts. And the reason for that is because we haven't been tracking it. We haven't put in place the real monitor and marking indicators in our systems to be able to track that number. And so currently when we're doing the dropout rate, we're doing it via a number of regressions. So for example, if I'm saying 41% of learners are missing from the system that were in grade 2 10 years ago, we don't know where those learners are. And that in itself is an indictment on our education system, that we are unable to account for the learners that have entered and registered and started in our school system, and we don't know where they are. We don't know if they've repeated, if they've left school, if they've gone to a different province. Because our systems don't speak to each other, we don't track individual learners across time. And that is the key thing we need to start doing in our country to make sure that we even can respond to the problem. If we don't know the extent of the problem, we're not tracking it, we're not putting it on the radar, we're not talking about it, there's no way we're going to be responding to it. And really our hope and our aim with this publication is that we get the information out into the public sphere, and we have people starting to demand answers to these questions and putting pressure on systems to have this coordinated response to tracking individual learners so that we can have that number and that we can be more sure of how we need to intervene.
Now, Merle, the report talks to the key factors contributing to school dropouts. And I want to start by saying there is, I know, in some quarters, a perception that this is a factor of kids being lazy, not being committed to their studies. But really, that is a terribly inaccurate generalization. And your report speaks to both push and pull factors that are contributing to children dropping out of school. Let's elaborate a little bit what those factors might look like. What do they include, Merle?
Research internationally agrees that dropout is not a singular event that just happens. It is definitely a culmination of, you know, different circumstances over time that leads to learner disengagement. And basically push factors are factors that can occur within a school space. So you're looking at things like learners experiencing sexual violence, corporal punishment, you know, just dysfunctional schools, unsafe schools, bullying, poor teachers or poor teacher preparation, poor quality of teaching, lack of resources, not having access to books, you know, poor structures and infrastructure. So a number and a myriad of reasons that cause barriers for learners in the school space. And then pull factors we categorize as things that are, you know, outside of the school space. So that can be individual factors related to the learner, for example, perhaps, you know, having difficulty with a disability or a learning disability, or family factors, you know, coming from a family where there are problems or difficulties that the learner has to face psychosocially, community factors. You know, many of our learners grow up in communities where violence is rife. They're exposed to trauma and violent situations and live under chronic stress. And all of these factors impact the learner's ability to maintain their grip on the opportunity of being within school. All of our learners start out bright-eyed, bushy-tailed in grade one, and we all root for them. But somehow along the way, we lose interest, and we lose these learners, and we forget that going to school every day is not something that is easy for many children. You know, some of them need to walk through gang-ridden areas, some of them need to travel many kilometers early in the morning to reach a space and a school space where they can reach quality education. Also the factor of cost and money. You know, besides just eradicating school fees in some schools, we know that the costs associated with school for uniforms, stationery, books, you know, just being able to get to school has burden to families that are already impoverished. So there's a number of reasons, and some of these interact and overplay for individual learners over time and culminate into dropout.
And well, you know, the distressing thing listening to that long list, as you say, many learners will face both the push and pull factors simultaneously. So many of these factors are external to the school environment, which suggests that if we are focusing purely on what are we spending on upskilling and up-resourcing the schools themselves, that's not necessarily going to change the picture, because in effect that money also needs to be spread outside of school into the wider community to change some of those factors.
Absolutely. We believe that schools are our best point of entry to reach learners. About 12 million learners every year enter the school system and are there for at least 206 days a year. We have access to young people, and we can impact their lives in a way that is, you know, we don't have access in any other way. And so schools are an engine for really kind of combating those issues and problems and challenges that learners face even outside of the school space. Many of the organizations we work with are implementing programs. programs and processes that work with communities outside, but they are impacting the school space. They are reaching learners within the school space. That's where they have access to them. That's where they identify the risk, and that's where they can put the responses into place. And so if we start viewing schools in that way, as these hubs and spaces where learners can actually come and change their lives, not just to gain education, but actually really receive the support they need to make it through the school system, exit, and be able to navigate their lives, you know, functionally, you know, then education is succeeding. Until we view education holistically in that way, we are going to be failing our learners continually.
Mm. You've mentioned the progression story and what happens to learners when they fail a grade midway through the school journey. And our listener, Sharon, referencing this on the WhatsApp line, as well as the issue of support in the lower grades. Let me just share her message. I'm sure that being unable to read with fluency or understanding plays a large part in our low marks and pass rate. Until we have children reading with fluency and understanding by the end of grade three, this problem is going to persist. Children who have problems reading for many reasons need assistance in the foundation phase to develop those reading and language skills. No child should be passed until they are given the professional help they need to read with fluency and understanding of their work. I'm sure this is also a contributor to the dropout rate, says Sharon. She's so right. And let's talk about the progression story, because it's never made sense to me, Merle. You're saying a learner has not achieved competency in the current year's work, and then they are accelerated into the next year. We know the CAPS curriculum is incredibly full. We know there is limited time in the day to get through the bare minimum of that curriculum. We know classes are crowded. Teachers do not have time to go and spend huge amounts of individual attention per learner. How can we even expect a learner who hasn't grasped last year's work to get to grips with and catch up with and stay ahead of this year's work? Is this part of the problem, the way the progression system works?
Definitely one of the things we need to consider. So we believe that repetition, in fact, of a grade is a very good indicator for if a learner will repeat. We know that a learner who is, you know, over age for their grade is more likely to repeat than a learner who is at the current age they need to be. And there's a myriad of reasons for that. So progression definitely needs to be implemented with the right considerations. So if we think of our school system and the fact that our classes are overcrowded, it means that we have very heterogeneous classes with different needs and capacity and capability of our learners, and we have teachers who are under pressure to produce only one, you know, the curriculum in time. Mm-hmm. And so really having a progressed learner sitting in the next grade without a concerted effort to help them catch up the gap that we identified in the earlier year, because we said they progressed, so we identified there's a gap. But we don't have an institutionalized way of responding to that learner's gap and helping them fulfill that once we've progressed them to the next year. That only means that they fall back and fall behind further. I agree with your listener, Sharon, that the foundation phase is extremely important and that we need to get the basics in place. But we also need to remember that right now there are thousands of learners, hundreds of thousands of learners sitting beyond the foundation phase who are unable to read for meaning, who are unable to grasp basic concepts, and we need to be putting interventions in place for these learners. Otherwise, they will leave the school system, you know, unable to engage in life functionally. So one of the stats we know is that 78% of our learners across the country in grade 4 cannot read for meaning in any language. That means if a learner can decode a word or read a word, they don't understand what they're reading. So we need to think about how we are teaching the basic skills, and if we are ensuring that the learners leave with the skill they need, instead of just being able to decode a word, that they understand how to apply critical thinking, thinking about complex concepts, asking questions, and engaging with the material in a way that helps them, you know, to answer questions when they get to later years in the schooling system. Mm-hmm. So definitely thinking about progression and repetition in a way that helps us understand what we need to impact and input in our curriculum to make that better. We need to have a progression policy that allows learners to have a catch-up system. So even if they are progressed, there is a plan in place, an individual development plan for that individual learner to be able to catch up what it is they've missed, to be able to fill that gap so that they can comfortably acclimate to the grade they're in. Mm. If that is not in place, we have no business progressing anybody.
Just for those who might have joined us late to the conversation, my guest on the line is Merle Mansfield, who's Program Director of the Zero Dropout Rate Campaign by the DG Murray Trust, talking to us about the factors contributing to our high percentage of school dropouts and what needs to change that picture in the long term. Let me throw the cat among the pigeons a bit here, Merle. How much of the problem, if at all, is schools wanting to protect their own reputation and pass rate and weeding out learners they feel might be at risk of passing or not passing, rather than saying, we're going to try, we're going to support them, we're going to take as much pride in the child who passes matric against expectations as we do in the child who gets seven A's? Is that a factor in this conversation?
It is a major factor in this conversation. In fact, I think it's one of the greatest perpetuating factors of the problem of dropout. We as a country have bought into the idea that a matric pass rate is the one thing, is the holy grail of our education system. In fact, we all wait for that mark to come out. We wait for learners to get a matric and to pass, and we forget them in the whole 12-year journey. There's no other assessment of how a school is doing besides marking them against their grade 12 mark. In fact, primary schools get away with not even having, you know, any kind of assessment that is nationally accredited besides having, you know, learners pass from grade 7. And so we only start looking at how well our learners are doing or how well our schools are doing in grade 12 when we put, you know, this magnifying glass on the performance of the matric class. Now, what happens? A school who feels under pressure to keep the throne of being, you know, the highest performing matric pass rate or having the most learners who pass matric are definitely not going to be considering learners who are needing extra help to go into matric. Many schools and many learners will tell you, schools have asked me to leave the school space. And schools are doing the best they can to protect their reputation because that's what they're getting measured against. We need to start having the conversation in terms of saying, is that quality education? Are we measuring the right thing? And is the matric pass rate giving us the kind of results or churning out the kind of learners and citizens we want in our country? And currently, we're not seeing that. That's not what's happening. That is why we have so many unemployed young people and so many young people who are not able to access any further opportunity once they've left the school system.
Mm. Well, I mean, Graham was asking earlier about how has the situation changed over the years, and you've pointed to the fact that we really struggle to answer that question because of the data that's available and the tracking of that data. But let's look to anecdotal evidence. I heard you in a previous interview mentioning your own experience of high school and the numbers in grade 8 versus grade 12 in your class. Won't you just share that with our audience?
Absolutely, Papa. I recall being in grade 8 many moons ago in my school on the Cape Flats, and we were about 300 grade 8 learners. We had about 8 or 9 grade 8 classes. And when I got to matric 5 years later, we were a class of 56 learners, one class, one matric class. And many of the learners, many of my friends, many of the people in my community had dropped out of the school system. Now, the thing that really sticks with me and struck me was that there was no outrage at that time that was the case. And currently it's the same thing, you know, there's no real shock and awe about the fact that all of these learners have disappeared. It's become so normalized in our communities and in our school spaces that we're going to have a small matric class. And that's kind of accepted and expected, and it shouldn't be. What happened to all those learners? You know, where are they? And what kind of lives are they leading because of the fact that they didn't have access to that opportunity? And why wasn't the support in place to keep them there? And why were none of us upset? Why was I not upset about it? And why am I, you know, when I think about it now, I think many of us as South Africans are walking around with similar experiences, we know similar stories, and we aren't outraged and we aren't concerned, but we all should be. This is definitely a national crisis.
Well, Christine is very concerned. She's WhatsApped to say, having a look at the dropout rate from grade 1 to matric for the 2017-18 cycle versus the latest one, it appears we lose approximately 500,000 learners per cycle from grade 1 to grade 12. In 10 years, that equates to 5 million learners. Why is the minister celebrating a very skewed matric pass rate? We have an education crisis. Christine recognizes it, Merle. The whole point of this interview is to make more people aware of it and recognize it. What would you like to see change in our individual mindsets about how we look at matric results and how we factor in the issue of dropouts?
I would, you know, I think Christina's absolutely right. And, you know, we all should be, you know, concerned, and we should all be talking about this as a problem. We should all be looking at dropout as a national and universal crisis that we all need to be responding to. It is not, we shouldn't locate the blame on the learner. It's not a lazy, dumb, you know, or ignorant or naughty child that doesn't want to participate in a school space. We need to really think about all the factors that are impacting learners' experience of the school space. And what are we doing within our own lives, within our own families, within our own communities, and in the spaces that we have influence in to really address this issue and to talk about it? A large part of our publication is talking about the interventions that have worked in school spaces, and many of them are built on the foundation of every learner who has a champion, has a longer or has a greater opportunity or chance to make it in school. You know, so it's important for us as adults, you know, to take learners under our wing, to start supporting learners and schools, to do what we can to crowd in support, you know, and do what we can in the corner and spaces that we are in to motivate learners to stay within the space.
Merle Mansfield is Program Director of the Zero Dropout Campaign being run by the DG Murray Trust. And if you'd like to read more about their work, please visit their website, dgmt.co.za. Merle, thank you so much. A fascinating conversation.